Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, broadcasting from my bedroom, which would mean it's Weird Things in the bedroom, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends. How are you?
And Brian Brushwood.
Are you sure this isn't Weird Things After Dark, where things get a little steamy in Andrew's bedroom?
Dude, I'm not saying it couldn't be. They're using a jackhammer like 10 feet from my door out front, so I figured I'd come back here and record from here unless we wanted the sound of the jackhammer.
Part of me would love a whole Weird Things episode just interrupted every 5 minutes with Andrew saying, damn it, shut up.
It's like... Well, it's like when you start podcasting, you first have kids. Go back and look at when you first had to figure out how to wrangle children while doing that.
It continues to be a chaotic vector over which I have little to no control.
But you're better managing that now.
Oh, yeah. It's called We Got a Very Good Lock and a Very Soundproof Door.
And some child-sized straitjackets.
That's right.
Gentlemen, it's all about convenience. And previously on an episode of Weird Things, we were waxing on about the potential of a self-driving future and the idea that it's not just about cars. It's not just the idea of, well, now I get into a car and my car's a Johnny Cab and it takes me where I want to go. What happens when you have things that move around by themselves using roads and whatnot? What happens in a world where you can get things from point A to point B without having to pay for a truck driver, without having to wait for a human schedule, when things just sort of happened by themselves, right? Yeah. And one of the examples that I just found today, which is really, really cool, like first I want to get into the idea of like the automation of the future, right? Amazon Go is a project where they're trying to develop a supermarket or a store that's completely automated. You walk in there, put whatever you want in your bag and walk out, and it uses RFID or whatever to tell what you bought, which is, you know, something we thought about for a while. But there's another concept, which is cool, which is sort of right out of the pages of Weird Things that they thought of this way before. And this is from a company called Wheelies, which is launching a test project of what they call the Mobi Mart. What is the Mobi Mart, I ask? The Mobi Mart is a large autonomous store.
Oh, okay? My word.
Yeah. This is like taco truck grocery store where you schedule it. Oh, my word.
So we're looking at like something about the size of a shipping container. It's got a big glass front and then it looks like a red box attached to it. But inside there's somebody looking through a bunch of red products, and it's something they plan to test out where it's a store that could theoretically go to a warehouse, get refilled, then drive to a location and just park there.
That's amazing. Well, and plus, like, you would just want to know, like, basically, man, apps change everything because you can open up the app a la Lyft and Uber, and you're thinking, like, I need stuff. And you can open the app, and it'll say, stuff will be less than a mile away from you in 30 minutes or currently is just down the street from you. And then, that's astonishing.
I'll give you a thing to think about. So, where I live in my apartment complex, every Thursday, the people who run the place, they bring in a food truck. They have a food truck. So Thursday night's food truck night. I've noticed that several other times a week, food trucks will show up because they realize, you know what? It's a densely packed area. There's a lot of like college students and stuff that don't have transportation. And there'll be another food truck there. Sometimes there's one across the street. And you think about like now food truck roundups have become a big deal. But you think about the idea of, hey, you know what? You know, there's going to be the convenience store is going to be at the corner tonight at 7 p.m.
Yeah. Well, it really makes you rethink all of retail space, right? Mm-hmm. Because the idea of, you know, food trucks got popular because even the staffing and purchase of that equipment is more mobile and modular than the idea of buying real estate, and now you're betting that the traffic that you're going to get will sustain your business. Here you can move easily. The biggest reason why restaurants go under is not the quality of the food or the service. it's the fact that it's just in the wrong place. And mm-hmm. for a mobile mart, you know, you can now do some really, really cool data analytics on like just where do people need random stuff, right? Like at what point do consumers like to go buy a random thing? And now it can just be on a regular schedule. So it's closer to, you know, places where people go to sleep, you know, like they're the suburbs during the night and downtown during the day.
You know, it's the only
we're watching
that-
video rendering of this thing driving through. I'm sorry. They're watching a video of this thing driving through at night. It's lit up like neon. It's a little eerie and Blade Runner-esque.
It is.
Yeah.
No, it looks, you know, you know, in that way that the future can be both hopeful, exciting, and also terrifying and dystopic. Like this is both.
Yeah, it's you know, the only I'm looking at this and here's what I honestly wonder. Like in the rendering that we're seeing here, we're seeing, you know, shoes and all kinds of higher end goods. But I don't think you're going to be able to do much more than what you would find at a convenience store. Right. It would just have to be the essential 200 sundries.
Think about this, though. OK, so. You get food trucks, and then food trucks are great because they have that variety. And one of the things that's been kind of really cool is that in Portland, I visited a girl there, and she lived right down at the end of her block was this lot that had like five or six different food trucks, right? And as much variety as you could hope for in a mall shopping cart, but it was all food trucks that were there permanently. I mean, they could move when they wanted to. In Fort Lauderdale, I don't know if you ever saw this, Justin, there was a part downtown by the beach where there was another lot that they put like green, you know, AstroTurf in there. And they had a couple other like food trucks and tables and stuff. And it was like a little mini restaurant thing. You could do specialty stores and stuff. And think about back in the day when you had the Tupperware party or you had somebody, the specialty sort of stuff shows up. That might be kind of a thing. Like you say, hey, you know what? I have a company. And what we do is we bring in exotic teas from around the world. And we actually have a tea store, and we're going to have the tea store. It's going to be in Santa Monica on Monday. It's going to be in, you know, Holmby Hills on Tuesday or whatever. And the idea that, I know they're going to be here on Tuesday. The tea store will be there. And it gives you, as much as we have online shopping, we're finding there is a place for still wanting to go look and browse.
Yeah. You know what? I think shoes would actually be a fantastic version of this. Imagine like Zappos runs with this. Mm-hmm. And then it's like Zappos looks at your order history and says, okay, in general, you like Vans. It's been a while since you replaced your dress shoes. You know, it knows enough about you that that the app pipes up and says, hey, this time we'll remind you when it gets closer. But if we were there Tuesday afternoon, would you want to take a look for new shoes?
I mean, it could do predictive, like, you know, you heard the story about how Amazon on their delivery trucks always keeps like one high end, like, you know, Canon Mark V, whatever, like the lightest big camera was. You mm-hmm. heard about this?
No.
They did their logistics. And they knew in cities like San Francisco, at any given time on any one of their trucks, there's always going to be one of those cameras because they know they're going to sell at least one or two of those per day. Mm-hmm. So they can get it to you in an hour because it's already on the truck because they know that it moves. So you could do your Zappos model, which could, and it could even be more predictive, like, because the problem is trying to get people to decide in advance, Mike, because then I might as well just order it. But you could be predictive and say, well, we know Brian's shoe size. And so we know if Brian gets here and he'll know that it's in here, he'll want it. But you could also do Nike could do like, hey, we could have a Nike fleet of 10 of these. And we could do Nike pop-up shops. You know, I was out in Melrose, where it's a big shopping district there. And you see these shoe stores and stuff and these specialty shops, these pop-up, they get lines going on for a block because people want to get the exclusives.
And you look at the proliferation of pop-up shops for like music and movies and mm-hmm. celebrities, like to run limited fashion lines. Like I could see, obviously, I think this is the play for these people now because they're going to sell their own. They can buy stuff that are good margins and you can just kind of use it as a mobile modular CVS. So you're going to buy all the same stuff. Or you just use it as empty warehouse space, right? Like mm-hmm. if it's all fully customizable, then, you know, I think I saw people on Twitter talking about, you know, 2 Chainz did a thing in, I forget where, I assume it's LA, but it was like a salon, a trap music salon where they were, you know, giving manicures and pedicures and selling like, you know, pretty girls like trap music, t-shirts and stuff like that. So like, why not? just go for empty space and office space. Like, why not have it be something where you're zooming all over the city?
I'll give you an even crazier thought. So, Brian, imagine you rented one of these and made it the scam stuff mobile, and it had all the scam stuff kind of thing, and there's a kiosk there, and it's like, hey, we've got elimination stuff, and it's going to be in Austin for one day, it's going to be in LA for another, and, you know, stop on by, I'll be there live on video chatting with you or whatever.
Dude, that's the crazy part, is because then what happens, like, so right now we're seeing the front end of this where you have wealthy mega companies that are able to invest in the infrastructure or whatever. At some point, there's going to be a portable pop-up shop for everyone's service that basically, just like Squarespace makes it easy for everyone to make a website, this would make it easy for anyone to have a pop-up store where it's like all the inventory for scam stuff is already at a facility in Atlanta right now. So basically, they could reach out to me and say, hey, you want to set up a tour? You don't even have to lift a finger. We've got the truck. We've got your stuff. We'll take it out. All we need you to do is to pick a theme, and maybe even like all the decorations are all video based. So it's just like, just paint it in the color scheme using the graphics you want. We'll brand it, we'll logify it. And it's like, you set up your tour or we'll give you the dates that you can set up X, Y, and Z. And man, that really could be.
Think about this. You're like, hey, VidCon, or hey, there's a magic convention, or hey, yeah, there's going to be NAB. Man, you know, I bet you if I put a scam school mobile pop-up there, and it's like, because you're getting rid of the human cost, and you could show up through whatever, that's the big factor here. So much of these costs are somebody to stock it, somebody to do this. But if you put that into that thing, you think about like that it could be a, you know, oh, it's going to have it be a Nerdtacular. No, we're going to be doing this event at Dragon Con, and so why don't I can put in all my specialty merchandise and stuff, and just,
oh my
when
God.
It's not there.
I'll tell you what, that's a great example, too, because Dragon Con, the first couple of years we came, I brought a trailer full of merch, and we sold a lot of stuff, but it was a tremendous pain in the butt. Just unbelievable. So much so that at some point, both Justin and I decided, you know what, Dragon Con's going to be a goodwill tour. Like, we're just out here to show up and say hi to the fans. And meanwhile, like, I'm sure the fans would love custom shirts and all that stuff. But it's the logistics of getting it there are just so much that it's not really worth doing.
Man, but you think about it is one of those concert tours, things like that, you know, the band merch. I mean, guys, I think we quit the podcast and we just start our mobile mark cast and actually start our company to do this.
And in fact, we could live in there.
Yeah. And I want to bring up a point of why, you know, it's even as we move into this increasingly online world and even as we start doing more and more there, we all sort of, I think everybody appreciates the value of being able to do some things in person, browsing things like that. Browsing's problematic for stores where you just browse and you go buy it online, but we still like to go look at things and we still love to go to events. And I'll give you an example of something that was really kind of amazing was I went to an event a couple days ago that was announced only like 2 days before, and I'm going to show you a photo of the crowd.
Oh, that's a monstrous crowd. That looks like a concert is happening.
Yeah, there was, I don't know what the estimate was, and I don't know if anybody knew, because I don't think anybody realized how many people there, but it was, you know, I would say it was probably in the tens of thousands of people showed up for this event. And it was organized 2 days before it was announced, and then that was what the turnout was. Now, the unfortunate circumstance of the event was it was about the passing of Adam West and celebrating his life, you know, TV's Batman. Because what this was at downtown city of Los Angeles, in honor of Adam West, they lit up the bat signal on City Hall.
The old 1960s one, too.
Yeah, the one from his TV show. So that was a really cool tribute that they did for there. But it was just, you look at this and how many people showed up. It was incredible. Which I was there going like, yeah, we still want to do things in person. We still want to go someplace live. It's why cons are bigger now than they've ever been before. And I think the idea of figuring out how you combine like retail, you know, online distribution with new technology, and you know, you start thinking like, yeah, these mobile shops and stuff, it's going to be a very different paradigm.
Well, and plus, like, I think about this, like there, I can picture a scenario where it's cheap enough, let's say in a 3D printing world where autonomous vehicles are there, that it might be worth it to 3D print out four or five shoes custom fit to me just for the off chance that I might pick one of them to buy. And if I don't, then the rest just get chopped up and recycled. They get rendered down into their constituent parts and then sent off to somewhere else.
It might be, you know, and here's this from The Verge had a very pessimistic response to this. And within it, there was a thing here. I'm like, oh, I think you just missed this. And their response, their final thing was, a mobile store could possibly help serve undeveloped urban areas with limited access to quality food or basic necessities. But it frankly feels like an idea that's best suited as a prop in a sci-fi movie. Now, let's back that up. Farmers markets. Imagine you and Justin get married, go off to, you know, some co-op somewhere, and you start your own little garden, your own little farmer's market, your own little farm, right?
Yep.
Imagine your ability to do farm to table. Pack your stuff, put it in your little mobile thing, it shows up at the farmer's market, and that alone, I think the hipster support for this alone is a $1 trillion economy.
Yeah, and I'll not lie, you know, this whole packaging kind of screams novelty. It feels a little Tomorrowland, you know, and it's got all the right buzzwords. It's a drone, self-driving, automated, what else is in the headlines? You know, solar power, all that stuff. But everything looks ridiculous at first, and then it just becomes
live
normal
life. The real thing actually driving around a campus.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this is something that could very well take off. You know, I mean, why do we feel that we have totally solved where I get my toothpaste? Right. You know, do we feel like we've totally solved why we need to go to a mini mart? Like, even in a world where, you know, I would say the three of us are probably on the far end of taking advantage of e-commerce and Amazon and stuff like that, I still wind up going to a CVS, you know, over 10, 15 times a year, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that if I knew that, hey, I got a notification that, I hate to go buy clothes because I'm a dude, but if I got a notification that said, hey, you know, the John Varvatos store is at the end of the block, I'm going to go there. A high chance I'll probably buy something. You know, I mean, it's just that I think about, like, the specialty kind of stuff, the kind of stuff of, like, there is that. I think there's a lot. But, yeah, the idea that could, you know, from the convenience store, like, I'm very bullish on this.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, why do we go to CVS? Like, why do we go to do these places? Because they buy good real estate and make good, clean shopping experiences. If you have a good, clean shopping experience that doesn't have to have the real estate to it and can go where you are going to be because it understands traffic patterns, why wouldn't it be successful?
Yeah, I go for a nightly walk, and it's 4 miles one way, 4 miles back. I passed 4 7-Elevens.
Yeah.
You know, easily. And most of those are in the first 2 miles. I mean, and you see the density. And then it's, Reader, in New York City. It's like every block has one of those. And so we see that there is that need for that. So
it's so interesting to me how much Neal Stephenson's book Snow Crash got right for all the wrong reasons. Like, so much of the imagery he had in there, you know, it was written as clearly meant to be a dystopian future with anarcho-capitalism run amok, to where, you know, the United States government is just a small lesser brand among others. Everything else is run by franchises, and you get actual legal citizenship to like a pizza franchise or whatever, and they have their own currency and everything. And yet so much of the imagery and so much of the practical realities of it are coming to pass. And it's just because on top of all the infrastructure that existed in the early 90s when this was written, there's this this second economy exploding over it of abundance. You know, his vision of I forgot what he called it, the metaverse, I think he called it, was essentially is all coming to pass, and it's wonderful. And disease is, you know, being cured, and people have more of everything, and, you know, it's weird for so many things that were clearly meant to tell a pessimistic tale. It's awesome to see how many of them are coming to pass in a very positive light.
I have a theory on this, and that is that progress brings solution, but progress brings complexity, and the more complexity you have, the more problems you have, but they're much smaller scale problems. It's like,
absolutely.
Where's my remote control to my TV? You know, yeah. I spent 10 minutes looking for that. Like, you have a magic little device that controls this TV that has hundreds of channels here, and your frustration was, I couldn't find the remote. You know, like, I couldn't get this app to download on my phone. Arrgh. You know, you think about all those mini little frustrations, and it's part of why we become, you listen to somebody's, like, somebody tech call us too, some of their pests, like, here, it's like, even on the mobile mart thing, like, it's maybe for this niche kind of thing, and it's also like this commercialization of things, which I agree that we're a commercialized culture, but once the first Neanderthal made some shiny little thing and said, you like that?
Yeah.
Right? How many fish hooks do you got? You know?
There really is something primal that we're forever going to be trying to satisfy. Only we're just going to do it in increasingly efficient ways.
Yeah, these are Deer Tribe rocks, by the way, guys. Deer Tribe rocks.
Oh, my God. You can't get those anywhere.
Yeah, not the Bear Woods ones. Those guys suck.
These are fully rock to table.
Yeah.
It's like you think, like, man, we want to get back to away from this commercialization or whatever. But you need to look at illustrations or photos of indigenous peoples and stuff, and it's feathers and an ornamentation and everything. You know, it's facial, you know, tattoos and all. It's all that sort of stuff. Like, yeah, no, it's a thing. It's just a thing we do. It's a thing we do. Or we go broke building things like, you know, Easter Island, you know?
JC Calhoun's in the chat saying, these are artisanal bespoke rocks.
Ooh. now you got my language. Hey, you know what's also artisanal and bespoke?
Oh, well, that would be the Patreon for Weird Things, patreon.com/weirdthings.
Heck yeah, man. You guys keep us on the regular. There was a time, there was dark days when we weren't able to do this show every single week to keep your brains filled with all the weirdest stuff from goblins to fully sentient stores that visit you in the future. And that's all made possible for those fantastic folks headed over to patreon.com/weirdthings.
We need your support.
Go ahead on over there. We got after shows. We got the After Things podcast, of course, which is your look into the more business side of the three of us. And it all takes place because you guys dare to support us. And we are so, so happy that you do.
We do be happy that you support us
and talk nice, good, and speak words
good. I've actually been working on the natural language processor thing, and that's like made me think about structure and words and how they structure those words. Brian,
yeah,
Justin,
yeah.
Oh,
I want you to imagine three of us were hanging out, right, in person, right?
Yeah, already this sounds improbable.
And then one of us is like, "Hey, later, dude, I'm off," and he was gone. Gone.
Wait, like he vanished in our eyes, or he just left?
Just drifted away, just sort of drifted off. Okay. And then, like, imagine that, like, we're like, let's say, Brian, it's you and I hanging out, and all of a sudden Justin drifts away, right?
Sure.
Okay. I want you to imagine a while later, we're like, man, it was always you and me, right? Just us.
Yeah. No, right? That's what I feel. I feel like Justin was just sort of a distant memory. By the way, you're describing what feels like that Reddit cartoon. It's like four panels long. It's one person handing something to another, and it says, "I made this." And then the person says, "You made this?" And there's one panel of him holding it, and then the person goes, "I made this." Like, completely forgetting, like, all he knows in that moment, like a goldfish discovering the other side of the fishbowl, is that he's holding a thing, and we're like, "Well, I must have made this. That's why it's in my hands."
So you and I are like, yeah, it's just been us, right? It's always been us, right?
I would imagine.
And then like we're hanging out, and we look around. I don't know. We look around, we see other people. We're at like a party, but everybody's sort of in groups. And it's, you know, you and I are just there. And then we look over and we see like a three person group over there. We see a three person group over there. We see a three person group over there.
Oh,
like, you know, is it odd? It's just you and I. Is it weird?
That there's not a third person?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and then we'd be like, it's a little weird, right?
Well,
you know? and then
maybe in this sample size, it's we appear to be the only duo in a room full of triplets.
Yeah, and we go over, we find some other duo, and they're a bit, you know, younger versions. They're like, hey, yeah, we're finally find another duo, and they're like crying, like, well, what's up? Why are you guys upset? Well, we were a trio. You were a trio. Yeah, we lost our buddy. Huh. And then we're trying to think, like, were we ever a trio?
I mean, I don't remember. All I remember is just the two of us.
Yeah, but you know, it would make maybe, because maybe like there's some patterns in the way we hang out, in the way that we interact, you know, and it would be like, man, if there'd been a third one of us, it might, because we don't quite know how, maybe how we met or whatever.
Okay, so I guess in a moment of self-reflection, we'd have to question why we do the things we do. We're like stuff like the order of our conversation, like, hey, you notice like there's this weird point where you say something, I say something, we kind of just wait and it feels right to wait a while, but nobody says anything before we start again?
Exactly. Now I want you to imagine that it wasn't you and me. It was just you, and you're just like, you're at the party, and you see it's instead of duos and trios, it's just single people and duos, and you're looking around, there's all these duos here, and I'm here by myself.
Is that, hold on, is this whole bit about you looking for a loved one? Are you looking to get married? What's going on?
Well, Brian, if you're asking. no, Brian. Imagine you're single, and you're in the room, and you see all these other duos there, and maybe a couple trios, and you're like, well, wow, I'm a single here. This is kind of weird. And then you talk, and finally see another single, and they're like, ah, I was a duo once. Maybe I was a triple, but now I'm both. But you're like, oh, and I'm older than him, maybe. And then finally, Neil deGrasse Tyson walks in and says, what we're talking about is, why is our sun by itself?
Oh, that's interesting.
He didn't actually say that. Scientists have been looking at maps of the galaxy and looking at all the other star systems that have two stars or multiple star systems and asking, like, why is our sun by itself? And a prevailing theory is, and it's brought up before, our sun had a twin.
Okay. All right. Wow. Okay. What was the book? You recommended it, and I read it, and it was hauntingly pessimistic, but it made the case that number one, Earth is very unusual because it only has one moon, and that also that's why life got created on Earth, and that's why life is rare, is because we have just one moon that's big enough to sweep out stuff that normally resets the life-creating button. So this sounds like a similar idea, but just with stars, because my guess is, in general, life may have a harder time developing on a planet orbiting a binary star system than a single star?
This didn't necessarily get into the idea of about life existing or whatever, but it just got into the idea that, like, hey, it would appear, like, we've talked about the idea that if you know, Jupiter had been much more massive, that could have been another part of a star. But this gets to the idea, like, hey, it would seem more than likely, they think that almost all stars actually start in pairs. The theory is they think that they almost all start in pairs, and then that's one of an essential part of star formation, and then eventually they just split up. They're like, listen, I need my own space. I'm going to go over here, you know, and maybe I'll drift into orbit of another star. Who knows? Can't say what's going to happen or not. And so there's a lot of things about our solar system we've tried to figure out, you know, how did this work out? And so this theory is that, and they've talked about this before, the idea of nemesis, which is the idea that there could be this far-off, distant companion star that sweeps through some point, bringing comets and stuff towards Earth, and annihilation kills the dinosaurs. This may not be that. This could just be some star that is, because if it left billions of years ago, we may never know which one it is. Somewhere in the sky, we could probably see it.
A long-lost twin.
And it may have. And, you know, it would probably have planets, too. Think about that, too, is that there is more than likely than not, it would have planets, okay? And the idea that you know, we have a twin solar system out there.
Yeah.
Not exactly like us. Maybe they'd be like kind of like the twin, like, oh, we're twins. Like, really? You know?
So I wonder if there's I'm assuming that there is some kind of compositional fingerprint of the type of matter that makes up our solar system. And I'll bet, you know, in a distant enough future where we've sent probes all over the place, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, just as we, you know, found a layer of iridium that clued us in that, you know, a single rock killed all the dinosaurs, maybe a probe will come back and say, hey, we, out of all the thousands of solar systems we've checked out, none of them are quite as close to our compositional fingerprint as this one is. This is your long lost star.
First, an alternative theory. I prefer to think that 65 million years ago, one dinosaur said to the other one, said, all right, I'm ready to turn on our iridium fusion reactor. What could go wrong?
Apparently I'm king of the Reddit comments, but there was a cartoon that just showed two dinosaurs, and then it shows a shooting star, and it says, "Oh, it's a shooting star. Make a wish." He goes, "I wish for more wishes," and then the sky is just filled with the meteors. Oh, my. They're like, what did you do?
It is a, as far as the article's like, we're not sure if they say that they don't know if they would be able to figure out which one was. I think that's a scientific answer from our data set that we have right now. And I think, yes, you could look at composition. We would know it might be approximately the same age, assuming the ignition point happened here or there. Compositionally, probably the same, you know, if it was the same sort of accretion disk. I think that there might be some ways to figure out to, like, calculate trajectories and stuff. I'm bullish on the idea that we could probably narrowing it down by saying we're only looking for stars that we think are of a certain age. We're looking at stars that would be within a certain distance frame of when this could have happened. But, I mean, there could be a billion years, give or take, distance. That could be problematic.
Well, I think it's possible. Think about this aspect,
too. But
I'm
not an astronomer.
and this is all wild speculation, of course, which is just what we're best at. Think about this. As far as we know, as hard evidence, we're the only life that ever created, which means in our admittedly way too small sample size, we know that of all the various configurations of matter, that the type in the Sol system – seems to be the most successful at creating life. So if another star system was you know, made up of the same stuff as we were, then it seems like is that too big of a cognitive leap to say that all things being equal, a star that was once made up of the same stuff as our system would be a better bet to start looking for life than anywhere else?
Yeah, it would. No, I would think so. The thing is that we have. And I don't know how well this works, but you know that we are a product of a stellar nursery. So there are probably hundreds or thousands of stars that were created from sort of the same area, you know, same thing that we were. So I don't know, like, you know, Alpha Centauri, assuming they came from the Sonian point, is that like, I don't know how compositionally it differs. You know, it certainly is a different size star and it's a different age and may have formed at a different point there. But I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. And I could say maybe, I don't know, maybe. but remember that is the one thing, is we did come from like a nursery of a lot of the same gas and stuff, formed a lot of stars.
Justin, would you feel any kinship? Like, let's say tomorrow word came out that this was definitely known and there's one star in the sky that you could point to and say, that's our twin star. Would you even care?
Well, like, just the idea of it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like at what level?
Like get a shirt that said, like, you know, same suns.exe.
Yeah.
All right. Let's put it in this context. We get contacted by two aliens at the same time. And one's like, yeah, hey, yo, bros, what's up? Warrior bros, long lost. You know, like, oh, cool. The other one's like, yeah, but those guys are jerks and we need your help because we're at war. You guys got to pick a side.
Oh man, family over, and so meanwhile, like the bro ones are like I don't know, your in-laws, you know, your distant relatives coming up asking for money.
And they're like, we're all made of star stuff. Remember that? We're all made of you and I. We're the same, you and I. You know, it's like, wait, villains always do that.
I got a problem with that. You show up for the first time, you know, when you've got problems, and now you need our help, like. All right, that seems like some toxic family behavior.
Okay, but also like one the ones that are like us, like they have bilateral symmetry, they have arms and legs, they look, you know, kind of proto humanoid, whereas the other guys, you know, they're just like they're octopods, right? They're nothing but beaks and arms and tentacles.
I'm saying go the other way, because no reason the other our twins would look anything like us. You know, what if they're the octopods and the strangers are like, you know,
are like speaking British sounding in English?
Well, they just look, you know, like they're like, I'd do that.
Yeah.
You know.
Or what about this? What if? Oh, this is interesting. Okay, now this is a practical one. Imagine that there are two alien civilizations, and they reach out to us, and one is as we've talked about, you know, the equivalent of humanity's children, sentient AI robots that self-replicate, and they're totally synthetic. They're like, yeah, no, we had a biological precursor that created us, and now it's all us, and we are this culture. And then separately, you have a biologically run, you know, I don't know, imagine humanity or some version of it, you know, millions of years later. Would you feel like, if you had to pick a side, would you feel beholden to go for the biological society versus the artificial one?
Brian, the solution's easy. Whoever's doable.
10-10 would bang.
Ultimately, this is a binary question, right? It's either ones or zeros.
Yeah. I hate to reduce it to that, but, you know, just saying. Because if they're not doable, then we're maybe going to come to head over. It's like, imagine, all right, if we were writing, like, military fiction in the 1920s, like military sort of fiction sort of stuff, imagine we're like, hey, you know, the Germans, you know, they may come back. Like, no, we beat them. Like, no, Germans are, they're pretty resilient people. They're pretty industrious. Like, I could see them, because I don't think this war thing's resolved. And they're like, all right, let's imagine our fictional matchup. Like, who's going to be on Germany's side? Like, okay, well, you know, the Italians, you know, I could see them going in on that, you know. And I could see, you know, Hungary, you know, we could see them going in on that. Like, all right, what if it was a global conflict? All right, what if they paired up with the Japanese?
Right.
Yeah. Wait, no, but they're this version, they're really racist. Oh, yeah, they're super, super, super racist. And they're going to team up with the Japanese.
And just because it's like interests align, and all of a sudden, you know, politics, strange bedfellows, all that stuff. So I guess you're right.
And then and then it's like, well, what would happen afterwards? Which is, you know, Man in the High Castle sort of deals with that idea of you know, like, what if they'd won? Like, how is that racial tension going to get resolved?
Yeah.
Season 3. We'll find out. gentlemen.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are ready for this episode of Journey Quest.
What? Whoa! If only we knew what had come before. Some form of, let's see. Last I remember, we were in the jungle. I had a stump. We saw signs. One with the smiley emoji. One with the death looking head. And we decided to go to the smiley side. And we showed up. Do you remember what folks were doing, Justin?
I don't. I remember that this is a very dense forest, and our monkey companion. Oh no! I remember. We came upon people that were at work doing something, and while we were trying to just surveil them, our villainous monkey companion went over to alert the people of our presence, and now we are at their mercy.
Well, then let's kick it off with our previously on.
Previously on
Journey Quest
is a very crudely painted emoji. The other sign, a skull and crossbones.
Whoever it is that's they're civilized enough to cook, maybe they'll be able to be reasoned with.
Ryan, what could go wrong? We're being chased by a cybernetically enhanced lunatic. We've gone through at least three dimensions, and we got three arms and a dream.
All right, so if the monkey's outed us, I mean, at this point, do we just throw our hands up and find out what they got to say?
Well, you got captured, and so you're in a hut, and the leader of the group was walking into the hut where you are.
Oh, that's right.
And also, Brian, let's not get too cavalier about how many hands we're throwing up.
Like, okay, all yeah. right, all right. Throw our hand in the air.
Yeah. So leader of the tribe walks in there, and you never quite saw, you smelled the sound of roasting meat. You never quite saw what was on the other side of that row of people, because Bibu, your monkey companion, who you blamed, and he's not a villain. I think he's very helpful, but you just, you know, failed to give him the proper guidance instruction that he needed. You know, it's just trying to find some other friends.
Hey man, we get it. Yeah. A wrench is useless when you want to cook a meal. You know, it's wrong tool for the wrong job.
Mm-hmm. Also, no, man. He's a bad guy. He's gonna get us killed. Screw
no,
you.
I don't know. I might be on Andrew's side here. Bebo's got his merits. We just got to figure out what they are.
Well, I hope you give him your other hand.
So, leader of the tribe walks in there. And he's, you know, looks kind of like a regular sort of dude, maybe late 30s, whatever. He's wearing a very tall stone, you know, one of those, what do they call them, steam pipe hats, whatever.
Stovepipe,
you know,
yep.
Shells, and, yeah, stovetop, whatever type.
Stovetop
hat,
stuffing.
Big, tall hat. Yeah, and he's got some shells and stuff on it. You know, his clothes look like they're made from early, you know, older clothes, been tied together and woven together. So it's sort of it's a very artisanal culture.
So hold on. Does it look as though these were recovered from other society? Because everything I'm picturing as I'm imagining looking around is very, very subsistence farming. Isolated Stone Age stuff. Is that not the case?
I mean, you see on his arm a tattoo that says the cake is a lie. So
oh,
you're like,
Jesus.
All right.
Hipsters, you know. Damn it.
Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Yeah. So they're like, he's like, well, hey, dudes, what's going on?
Hey, man, what's the haps? Just a couple of bros trying to hang out, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you kind of snuck up us on it there, you know. You got to be careful. That could really go south real, real fast.
Ah, well, you know, that's just Southern hospitality. A little courtesy for you.
Whoa, what's with the stump? What's with the stump there, buddy? That looks like it's still bleeding.
Yeah, funny story. I might currently need medical attention. You don't happen to have a healer or a witch doctor or a health
regular
bot.
Doctor? Yeah, we could just start with regular doctors.
No, I point my stump. Yeah. I hold my stump up as I stage whisper to Justin. I was like, I don't think they're very civilized. The best we can hope for is a shaman.
So you have like any kind of military doctor, you know, somebody that can help my friend out?
Dude, I'd love to help you out, but I lost my certification from the medical boards when they no longer had medical boards a couple of years ago. So I don't know if I'm really qualified, able to handle that. And I don't know what your insurance situation
is
either.
Yeah, but also, I mean, it's just us ladies here. Come on. It's like, ain't no cops. Ain't no doc cops around as far as I can see.
Rules are rules, man.
Okay, no. Rule of law. That's good. That's good.
Or end up without the hand?
It's complicated.
He hasn't had a hand since birth. He accidentally rubbed it on a rock, and that's why it's bleeding. But we really do need somebody to take a look at it. We're just trying to survive this jungle.
Mm-hmm. Your story sounds a little bit fishy, gentlemen. A little bit fishy. That's right. We don't care. It's fine.
Oh, thank goodness. Our peeps. Peeps.
Hey, Pedro, come in here, buddy. In walks another guy. He's got a medical kit. Like, yeah, go ahead. Just stop him from bleeding all over the place. And they wrap your stump up like this.
I try to real quick take a peek in his doctor's bag. Is there anything exotic in there that looks like it might be like a robot hand or something I can ask for?
Nope, there's like a Wii magazine from 1983.
Damn. Although I ask, hey, can I borrow your Wii magazine from 1983?
He closes the case, pushes it away, okay. And gives you an eye, and then looks around. You weren't supposed to see that. So, gentlemen, this is the head of the tribe here talking. And so, where are you from? What brought you here? What brought you about here?
Friend, you wouldn't believe us if we told you. We are podcasters from another dimension.
Oh, hold on one second. I'll be right back. He gets up, just walks out in the middle of your talk.
Hey, I lean over. Justin, maybe before we say where we're from, let's find out where here is. Should we pretend like we know what's going on, or should we just explain that we're... I guess we should just tell them the truth.
Pedro says, I think you guys should just explain everything. And also, if you want to have a private conversation, don't do it while I'm wrapping your hand.
Okay, hey, Pedro, while the boss is away, what can you tell us about this place?
It's got its ups and its downs, you know, but it's good. Things are pretty cool here.
Okay, Pedro, do you know where Earth is?
Pedro looks over at Justin. Your friend may have lost more blood than I realized.
Wait, why is that?
Why are you asking me where Earth is? Where do you think we are?
Okay,
cool. All right, well, hey, listen, you got to understand, we've been on a long, strange trip here, and we've seen our entire families and friends all die. We've traversed things that you would make your hair stand up on end.
I watched my fiance get devoured by a giant raccoon. Please go on, tell me more.
Oh, great. So you can relate. We're a bit adrift. We've been out of the loop for a bit. In sense of time, do you know when we are on Earth?
Oh, gosh. I think it's Thursday. I got to check. I'm never good at that. I'm just going to tell you right now, Pedro leans in really closely. He starts to whisper, says, whatever you do, when he asks you, if you want to play UGG, be sure to tell him. Hey, I'm back, guys, and in walks the tribal leader. By the way, I introduced myself. My name is Phil. In his hand, he's actually got like a big meaty something. He's chewing on it. It smells fantastic, though. Smells fantastic. Sorry, we're just having our cookout here, and I just wanted to get some before it got cold. So where were we? You said you were some sort of MySpace personalities or something.
So you've heard of MySpace. You've heard of. Do you have the internet here?
I mean, not presently. No. I mean, we'd need electricity first, and then maybe we could get the internet.
Yeah,
is that how it works?
Yeah.
So you did have the internet at a certain point.
Yes, I had the internet at a certain point when I lived in Portland. Pretty cool.
How did you get from Portland to here?
I walked.
So we're
but anyhow
close to
we're
Portland.
Not here to talk. We're not here to talk about me and how I got here. We're talking about you. What you guys' intentions are here?
Listen, I'm not gonna lie. We were in an abusive relationship. We had what we thought was a real partnership with someone, and it turns out, you know the legend of Zuckerberg, right? We got Zuckerberg, got kicked out. We co-founded a venture, and now this guy's gone crazy. He's power mad. He's got more resources than you can manage, and he seems intent on stamping out the little guy. And when with us being the little guy, you know, we don't like that.
You know, the way we tell the legend is Zuckerberg, actually, he was building something really cool and somebody tried to sabotage it from within because they weren't getting what they thought was their fair share. And so in order to prevent that from happening again, he had to restructure in order to prevent that.
Yeah, I think we both see it the same way. That's accurate.
Interesting. So good. You know, so I'm not a sauce guy. A little bit of sauce is great.
Pal, what is that you're eating there?
Oh, UGG meat. Anyhow, I shouldn't be eating in front of you. I'm sorry. I apologize. Let me just devour this. He finishes.
It's fine.
Looks at his fingers. All right. Now, here's what you need to know. If you're going to continue on your way, this jungle has a name. It is the jungle of death. And that is because everything in this jungle will try to kill you.
Is there any exceptions to that?
Presently, not really. And the only way that we were able to survive is we banded together, which was hard because we went through kind of an early phase. It was real. We tried to do this sort of everybody, one person, one vote sort of thing. We tried to do everything by committee and we ended up having to kill half the people. And then we kind of came to sort of consensus that a leadership was sort of the best policy. I know it sounds drastically Trumpy. Those other guys, they were really, really annoying. You ever lived in a commune? Not fun. Nothing got done.
So when you got you killed them. Is there a mass grave somewhere around here?
You know, you're very focused on past. Let's talk about the future. And what I want to talk about the future is that if you want to survive, you probably need to team up with us. You're free to go roam off into the jungle. Your chances of survival are slim and none. And I'm going to give you an example of some of the perils out there. We have the raping spiders. I can tell you what they do.
Oh.
Yeah.
The rapping spiders? Like they
No, like he said raving. Like they're just insane and they got glow sticks.
So imagine you're walking along and you see a little tiny spider web. You're like, oh, a spider web. And you go break the spider web. And then the next thing you know, you step into an almost invisible spider web and you try to move and you can't move. And then a large, large spider starts to trap you and wrap you up and cocoon you. But it's actually how it mates.
Oh dear. Okay.
And it can't see so well, and so it thinks you're another spider. And then what it does, I can give you the details.
No, it's fine. I think we get it. Yeah. So we've got the wrapping spider, and then what else?
Yes. So we've got that. We have the molesting sloths, which
they take their time.
I mean, they're cuddly at first, like, oh, that's really cool. And they're like, that was an inappropriate touch. Like, that's really, and then you try to pull away and then they get angry. They get really, really angry.
Okay. So we get that the outside world is pretty bad. Let's blue sky this. Let's say we decided to join your gang. What would our responsibilities be?
Well, it's not as easy as that, gentlemen. To be part of our tribe, to be part of the group here, we do have kind of an application process.
Okay.
And because it's just, you know, it didn't work out with those other guys. Like, they were really jerks. So basically, but it's simple. It's kind of fun. You know, like you know, I used to actually, you know, before I got into, like, medical school, I used to work for a firm, and we did, you know, how do you inboarding, and we try to find out the best way is to sort of find out who's best for you or whatever. And we think gamification is really the way to do it. Really do games because they're team building. You figure out who's a good player, who's not. So we have a game called UGG.
Yeah. What is involved in UGG?
Well,
I thought you were eating UGG. Is it a food or a game?
Both.
Ooh, Justin, this sounds fun.
Yeah.
What are the details on UGG?
So, I can't give you all the explanation right away because that's part of the fun of the game. Is once you're into the game, because we don't have people going, I'm not going to sign up for it unless you tell me what it is. And then you're in the middle of like, no, I don't want to do UGG. You know, it's like going to an escape room with a friend who doesn't know what it is, and they're like, oh, we just got to stand here for 30 minutes. This is dumb. And you're like, you suck, Phil, and you can't be our friend anymore, and why'd you move to Portland if you weren't going to be cool, and you should just go back to your magazine and your buddy Pedro and reading your wee magazines.
Okay. Man, that general anecdote really does speak to us about the importance.
Because maybe somebody would tell you what an escape room was, but if they just told you beforehand, we're going to do this thing and just be cool with it. If you were told to be cool, then you would have been cool with it because you're a totally cool, chill guy. You just don't like surprises.
Yeah. Listen, Phil, can we just trade? Can we give you something of value and maybe take some magic wrapping spider antidotes and be on our way? Or we're going to have to play UGG, aren't we, Justin?
I think we're going to have to play UGG.
I look over at Pedro. And I raise an eyebrow and I try to like I nod slightly and then shake my head slightly like
you have to just go really slow. We are, as you look at Pedro's face to see whether he's happy or sad.
We are very interested in playing UGG .. Yep. And then look at Pedro. Do I get a read on Pedro's reaction?
Going to play.
Pedro pulls out his copy of Wii Magazine, although it's upside down, and pretends to read it and watches Phil.
All right, Phil. Yeah. You want to know what? You made a real persuasive argument. I feel like we're going to join. We're going. Well, this isn't no weird escape room moment. We're your boys, Phil. Let's play UGG, the best way it's ever been played.
Yeah. Also, on our adventures, we ran into all those jerks from that panic room. They're all dead now or working at McDonald's.
I'm glad to hear that. It's weird that you would know who they are, but I'm not going to.
We know a lot of things, man. We're mysterious travelers from another dimension.
All right. Well, we got to go into the UGG room. We're going to explain to you how you're going to play UGG. And remember, you can't say no now. The penalty for, you know, leaving UGG before UGG starts is, well,
you have to play UGG.
Ugly. Wink.
Gotcha.
So they gather up. You guys do get up. You're still being escorted. You walk out of the hut, and you still see the line of people, and you see the flames and the flickering smoke, and you smell just this delicious smell of meat. You're like, oh, sounds, it smells so good. So good. And you guys are really, really hungry.
Man, you know what? I absentmindedly, I walk up and I'm like, I point my stump right at the food and I'm like,
you can't see, you don't know what they're eating, Brian. You see a crowd of people surrounding it.
So. I wave my stump. I hold my stump forward as if a magic wand to ward people away. I'm hoping that they'll be made uncomfortable by my stump. And I just kind of weave in cause I want to see the food that smells so good.
They're like, no, you gotta play UGG before you can have some UGG.
All right. Well, let's UGG it up. Also, I ask really fast. Anybody have a hook or a robotic hand? No?
Bibu the monkey comes walking up with a coconut with like a little twig sticking out of it. He tried to make you a little pirate hook.
Oh, that's amazing. I give a big hug to Bibo and I was like, thank you, you're the best. And I put my stuff in the nut.
It's too big and it smells like rotting flesh. And you're like, yeah. He's like so happy that you're wearing it.
I put it on his head like a hat. And I say, and that's for you.
Grows
buddy.
Back into the crowd and he comes back chewing on some meat with some barbecue sauce. It looks a lot like blood just trickling down all over his fur.
Okay. All right. We're in the UGG room. Let's go. Let's do this.
They take you to the UGG room. They bring you into an UGG room. They blindfold you. They sit you down inside of another hut, right?
Yeah.
And you hear this voiceover say, you know, in the beginning, man was looking for ways to challenge himself. He invented games, tournaments, conquests from the era of Go, checkers, chess, Greco-Roman wrestling. Now we have achieved the greatest achievement ever in achievements. And it's totally cool to repeat yourself with adverbs and verbs and stuff here and nouns. It's totally cool. We do that all the time here. It's a thing we do. To heck with MLA.
English is a living language. It's not weird for me to get so self-referential. That's a common mode of talking here. And who are you to judge our society anyway?
Gentlemen, you are about to embark upon the greatest game ever, the game of UGG. Blindfolds, please! And they whip off your blindfolds, and next time I'm on Journey Quest.
Yeah! Better be another trivia contest. Or maybe it's Hearthstone with seashells.
I think it's Beatles trivia.
Beatles trivia. Yes.
So some picks. I got some picks.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to double down on my Snow Crash pick. It is really fun. It was fun when the Snow Crash came out to see this crazy idea of what could happen in the future. Now we live in the future, and it's great to see how right he got so much, and it's a lot of fun.
You know, what's funny is if you go back to that Amazon page, I'm going to show you a very interesting trend. It is a great novel. I love Snow Crash. It's 4 out of 5 stars solid. Now, when a group first finds a novel and tends to like it, often it's 4.5, 5 stars. Mm-hmm. But then when a book reaches outside of its sort of its Venn diagram of the intended audience, you'll see this sort of thing where like great books, because this is like one of the best, it's like one of the top 100 best English language books and sci-fi novels and all that. You'll watch the sort of, it surprised me too, because I look at books I love that like, why does this have 4 stars and not 5, you know, or 3.5 and not this? And it's because when it expands into other groups and other people like, oh, you should read this, and like who weren't naturally attracted to it.
Yep.
Who go, yeah, it's a lot of technical stuff and nerd stuff.
I see that happen on the Modern Rogue channel. Every so often we'll do something that will get shared an awful lot. And once it gets shared, like you can tell because the ratio of likes to dislikes really goes to crap. So it's like when I'm sad when I see 99% likes, because it means, you know, that we've only reached inside our bubble.
Yeah. I think it almost wonder if you want to have, there should be some other system that say like of your cohort, which I know they try to do in like Netflix and stuff, but it's so opaque what's going on. And they got rid of like for some stuff, the star system, because like a lot of their content just was not getting good reviews and they didn't want to look like it was just filled with junk stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Justin, you have a pick?
Yeah, I watched this last night. It is the 2012 Steven Spielberg film, Catch Me If You Can. And I forgot how much, 2002, not 2012. I forgot how much I really, really love this, this movie. Of course, based on the Frank Abagnale Jr. book, which is in its own right amazing, and everybody should read or listen to it. But, you know, just so well directed, and then the performances by by Leo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks and, you know, Christopher Walken are just top notch. I just love it so much.
It's a great book.
And it's the movie is pretty faithful to the book, and the book is a true account. I mean, there are some adjustments they have to make to make it a more human drama, you know, like the connection between, you know, his dad and so on. But I thought it was great. It's one of my favorite real life stories of all time.
Yeah, two things. One is in Abagnale now, he lectures to like FBI groups. My brother heard him talk as an FBI agent, and so he would lecture to law enforcement. Because what makes him sort of interesting as a guy is this consummate con artist who started as a teenager. He's not a sociopath. He was not. Many of your con artists and people who do pull off those kind of levels really are career criminals and sociopaths. He really was just a very intelligent teenager who just sort of got away with it and got away with it and kept getting away with it until finally, you know, he kind of reined in and he didn't go back to that. And that makes his story fascinating. I was always fascinated by the idea of like, here's somebody who really didn't have, you know, wasn't a bad guy, was not a bad guy who did things. He wasn't doing things. Sometimes you hear these cases that sound like it. You find out like, yeah, and then they killed so-and-so to cover this up, or then they threatened this person or whatever. And that's not his case. He was just a guy that just, you know, he counterfeited, he committed fraud, but he never did a violent thing to anybody else.
Plus also he, you know, he just took these outrageous risks and spent so much of his time as an imposter that one of my favorite parts of the story is like, he was trying to figure out how to pretend to be a lawyer and then realized that in Virginia, as long as you pass the bar, you don't have to go to law school. So he's like, well, screw it. So he just read up and then took the bar and passed it. So among his exploits, you know, he didn't even fake becoming a lawyer. He just became an actual lawyer.
Amazing, amazing career life. And he could be an HBO miniseries, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff he did. I based my Damian Knight character in my Angel Killer books largely on him.
I did not know that. But now that you say that, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
There's a passing reference to Abagnale in there. The idea of like, because, you know, the Damian Knight on one hand sounds like the sociopath and stuff. But like, well, but here's this other example of somebody who just says, I'm going to live outside the rules. I can get away with this stuff. And so as long as I can get away with it, and really the thing that caught him up was, you know, the counterfeiting, you know, because that we take serious.
Yeah.
Pretending to be a doctor or whatever, if you're smart, you'll get away with it.
So and I've really, heard. Like, he had clever solutions, but it's just the doing it more than once. Doing anything more than once creates a pattern, and it was the pattern that brought him down.
Yeah. My pick, I've got two. I've got a recommendation and a pick. I got a recommendation, and this might be kind of cool thing. I've been, I mentioned this before, I've been digging deep into learning coding and working on that. I got into iOS development, doing app development, and I talked a little bit about that last week. And there's so many great resources now out there for learning anything and everything when it comes to Photoshop, when it comes to learning to program. I started a iOS course a week ago, and I've already been building my own apps, you know, and from, you know, in a 2-week span of, you can just do a straight up course and be doing something in a day. You know, but I want to get a deeper understanding. My point is, there's so many great resources out there for learning things right now. And one of the really good ones was that I actually did a course on this on lynda.com, which was an iOS course, which was really, really useful and very, very well explained. And those courses you'll find on lynda.com, I talked to a buddy who goes to, like, you know, developers conferences and stuff. He says, yeah, you know, the people who do those courses, they're the same people they have at conferences and stuff teaching you stuff. You know, if you want to learn how to do edit, you know, or if you want to learn to do visual effects and, you know, Adobe After Effects, some of the people who teach these courses professionally teach these things. And that's why some of them are extremely well presented. And that's the quality. Here's the cool tip. Many library systems have an agreement with lynda.com where you can log on to lynda.com for free and get complete access to the courses. I was about to go like, oh, let me go get a lynda.com subscription. I remembered somebody told me that. And then I checked and I found out that my library card, I had an e-card version. I could use my library card, my part of my phone number, logged in, created an account, and had access to all of that stuff. So check with your local library and find out if you get free access to lynda.com. And you'll find out that often libraries will subscribe to other services too, courses, certification, training, things like that, that are completely free. So, if you want to learn something, it is effectively free. Between what you can find on YouTube, and if you want to look for some slightly more well-presented stuff like you might find on lynda.com where they'll have downloadable files, et cetera, there's just a lot of great, you know, a lot of great stuff there. It is, and I actually wrote an email to Matt Ridley about this. We'll be seeing Wednesday, by the way. And I said, you know, one of the things that I think that's an important thing about this age of abundance is just the fact that it's so easy to get training and to learn things now that the cost of learning stuff has fallen tremendously. Now, the cost of higher education has gone up in many cases, and that's an entirely different discussion of why that did. but the actual learning, the acquisition of skills has never been this easy and cheap. So that's my
tip. That's awesome. That is a genuinely sharp tip.
My thing I've been playing with is, when I was a little boy, there was this TV show I watched, and I don't know, it was kind of very, very obscure. I had to watch it on public television. And there was this guy who was always kind of eccentric, but sometimes they changed up the actors on it. And he would go around and have adventures in time and space and protect humanity from there. And he used this device called ultrasonic Phillips.
Sure. Yeah. Sounds an awful lot like you're describing.
Memory's hazy.
Sure.
Anyhow, as a kid, I thought, man, when I grow up, I want to have a pocket full of jelly babies, wear a long coat and a scarf and a big frizzy hair, and carry around a hypersonic Phillips head. I think that's what it was. But that day is today. And it turns out that show, I don't know if you ever heard of it, came back again. It's called Doctor Who.
Whoa, get out. Never heard of it.
Yeah, a little obscure thing. Not a lot of people know about it. You should check it out. Anyhow, as a kid, I'm like, man, a sonic screwdriver would be really cool. Now, I did get an iPhone. I have an iPhone, which is a lot like a sonic screwdriver. You start thinking about the things you could do. But I would like to say, man, I want a sonic screwdriver, something that looks like maybe could arguably be considered a sex toy on some streaming channel and get me banned. Little in-house reference here. I finally decided today is the day, and I bought one. And it's actually this.
Whoa. Audio listeners, he's holding up what looks like I don't even know how to describe it. It looks like a vape pen with a with a circle cut out on one side.
That's right, Bri. It's a cannabis vape pen.
and a single button. If the iPhone was reimagined as a vape pen that could be hung up on a hook, it would be this.
All right, well, you ready?
I know exactly what that is. That is the new Amazon, I forget what it's called, but it is
Dash Wand.
The Dash Wand. Was that it?
Yep. It's Alexa in wand form.
Whoa. Yes.
And it now scans barcodes.
So what it does is I can scan barcodes. So if you're in your kitchen and you're like, man, I'm running out of noodle ramen, scan it, add it to your shopping list. Man, I'm running out of this. Scan it, add it to your shopping list.
Oh, this seems
basically
dangerous.
They turn me into a supermarket clerk in my own house, but I can be like, what time is it?
The time is 1 p.m.
So where
do you love me?
There are people I admire and things I can't do without, but I'm still trying to figure out human love.
Me too.
That is dangerous. I'm never going to the store again.
So it is what it is. It's an Alexa wand. It's a little handheld thing. It's got a magnet in it. You put it in your Wi-Fi. It does many of the things that Alexa does. This is funny, though. What can you do?
I can play music, answer questions, get the news and weather, create to-do lists, and much more.
Okay. Play some music.
Amazon Music is not supported on this device.
So what's cool about it, it's only $20 and you get a $20 credit for like Amazon Fresh or something like that. I think I have enough Amazon Fresh credits for, an attorney, but you get $20 credit, whatever. But the point is like, if you want just like a simple, not always on Alexa, you can do this. It has like almost all anything. It's not going to do anything it's going to stream continuously for, but a lot of other stuff that you need. Can you set an alarm?
Alarms are not currently supported on this device.
Probably good. So it's very much in beta.
And so we'll see. I don't know if they will or what they will or will not support with that, because it's designed to be very, very simple, but it can do a lot of other stuff like what's the weather?
Right now in Glendale, it's 86 degrees with clear skies and sun.
Not in Glendale, but that's okay. Point is, it's a very interesting idea. The idea of moving Alexa out into all these different things. Like if you have an iPhone or an Android, you can have an Alexa inside of your app and you can function Alexa there. And my Alexa Dot keeps turning on every time I say her name, which we all know about. It's a very interesting little thing, but it's $20. It's just $20, and that's the power of oh, we'll just create a bunch of these little magic buttons you press that do whatever you want.
How amazing. How far we've come since the days of QCAT, where that big pain in the butt fiasco. Structurally, this does what the QCAT was always imagined to be able to do, but it does it without any of the hangups.
Well, the problem, so QCAT, for those of you who don't know, QCAT years ago was the idea of merchandisers. They wanted to create they called it the cat because you could have a mouse, and they wanted to have this other thing you attach to your computer called a QCAT. And the division was you'd have this thing that had a little scanner on it, and that you could put in, like, not unlike, you know, the QR codes and stuff, that you could scan QCAT codes in a magazine. You'd be flipping through a magazine, and you'd see an ad for the new Ford Explorer. Like, oh, that sounds really interesting. Let me take my QCAT, scan the QCAT code, and I can play an ad for the Ford thing. I mean, that was its general sort of push that they put it out there, which was dumb. It was dumb. Every subscriber of Wired magazine got one.
It came in the newspaper for some regions. They spent millions of dollars to send these out, and then when nobody used them to buy stuff or look at ads or whatever, and instead they're like, well, this is a perfectly good IR reader,
But that people started hacking it from the initially because they're like, well, I could use this to scan ISBNs, and it would not scan an ISBN code. It was designed. They didn't want it to do that. They wanted you to have you scan your own thing, and people are like, you sent me this thing for free. I'm going to hack it to make it do an ISBN code. And I think the QCAT people tried to fight this.
Yeah, they did.
But it lost because, like, you gave these away to people for free. Nobody bought one or agreed into any sort of commercial, you know, transaction with this. Sorry, dudes. You know, if we throw this thing on your doorstep, you're like, well, I got to use for it. You know, yeah. And there's still, you know, an evolving form of law, which is still going on in the state to this day over that. But it was dumb because you had to pay them to be able to create QCAT codes. You could create your own. It was just a dumb thing that didn't. You're like, well, why don't I use this as an existing barcode? No. If it did that, it still would have failed, but it would have been a more interesting failure.
Yeah. Well, and the I guess the whole positioning was get the customers to use the gizmo and get the companies to pay you to, you know, be the man in the middle perpetually. And of course, that kind of business often breaks down in an internet age where we don't like that.
It was it was publishing and advertising trying to figure out the internet, and publishers were excited about it because they saw this as this bridge, because they were fearful because magazine publishing, which was a long time ago, much bigger, was like, well, you know, how do we make ourselves still relevant? Like, oh, what if you go through a magazine and you find something cool and then you can go to the web, and it's like, or I just find everything on the web and magazines become this anachronism and I'll read on the toilet until somebody invents an iPhone.
Right.
and although, you know, it's funny though, and I bring this up again from reading Tim Wu's book, the Attention Merchants.
Yeah.
But People Magazine still makes far more money in revenue than like BuzzFeed or other, and even any other, like, you know, Huffington Post or whatever. Like, People Magazine's ad revenue is humongous compared to just about any single
fascinating.
Web properties.
It's fascinating how in the bubble we are with the internet, because of course we announced last week that we are as of now 5 days away from Scam School being a TV show on the Science Channel. And you would think that when I make that announcement on the Scam School channel, everyone will be like, oh, that's great, you're going to reach a lot of people. And yet the perception is just like, I don't know, it seems like TV is just a step down from the internet or from YouTube or whatever. And of course, that's not true. By the numbers, TV is still the 10,000-pound gorilla. By the numbers, most people watch television and most people watch appointment viewing. They watch live. They watch just what happens to be on. And yet, because we live in this bubble, we all think of television and magazines as these quaint anachronisms, but that's definitely not the case.
Yeah. That is sure. Gentlemen.
By the way, Saturday morning, 8 Eastern, 5 West Coast, AM, Saturday morning on the Science Channel.
Hell yeah. Set your DVRs right now. Set them, you filthy animals.
Set my DVR to record Scam School on the Science Channel.
Science Channel.
Yes, Andrew, I will do that right away.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yay. Hey, wow.
Amazing what technology can do. Yeah. Alexa, it's been weird.
Sorry, I'm not sure.
Everybody's thing has just gone up.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.